This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
The Rocky Mountains of North America, home to some of the most beautiful, pristine forests in the world. But the shades of burnt golden reds aren't the changing tones of autumn. They're dead and dying trees.
We're looking at tree mortality over a scale of tens of millions of hectares in the last decade alone.
In fact, right across the globe, there are reports of trees dying in mass numbers. From Europe, from Africa, even right across the Amazon, and right here in Australia.
Teeming green. Green brain, you're facing lobotomy. Climate Control Center for the World. If a tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear? If a tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear?
A startling documentary from the public broadcaster ABC Australia explores dying forests. It is happening all around the world, in Europe, Asia, Africa, South America, and all down the west coast of North America. Call it bugs, call it fungus, call it drought and record heat, call it climate change, and plain old pollution. Whether it's satellite photos or you walking through the dying woods, it's heartbreaking. Why are the forests dying around the world? I'm Alex Smith. I've covered climate change in so many Radio EcoShock programs. Find them in our website. Later in this program, we'll talk to a key scientist, Lisa Ainsworth, about misplaced expectations that rising carbon dioxide levels will green the planet and feed billions more people. But first, we're going to ground with a citizen activist from New Jersey. Her trees, and all our trees, are weakened and dying from a much simpler cause, plain old pollution. The air looks cleaner, but all that industrial exhaust is still deadly to plants and our lungs. The trees are talking to us, but we just aren't listening.
Radio EcoShock.
One of the brightest plays now on Broadway is Paint Your Wagon, for which Frederick Lowe has written a brilliant score. As his next number, Thomas L. Thomas, accompanied by the Firestone Chorus, sings a special arrangement of one of the hit tunes from this gay musical play, entitled I Talk to the Tree.
I talk to the trees, but they don't listen to me. I talk to the stars, but they never hear me.
In New Jersey, Gail Sawacki noticed trees and other plants were dying. She spent countless hours finding out why, and the real villain may surprise you. It's not all global warming, and the cause is all around you, hurting your lungs as well. I'm Alex Smith, saying Gail Sawacki, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex.
I'd like to ask you, you know, we've had emails back and forth for a couple of years. I'm busy tracking droughts and global warming in my many radio programs. And for a while there, your cause just didn't click with me. And then from your website, I did see that TV documentary by the ABC Australia program called Catalyst. And it was very shocking about tree deaths in Australia and around the world. There was another news story out of Australia questioning whether trees there would survive at all. And living here in the dying pine forest of British Columbia, I've seen it myself. So, Gail, what made you first fear for the trees?
Well, the very first, I have a little farm, and I love trees. So I've planted quite a few of them, and perhaps for that reason more than a lot of people that take them for granted or perhaps live in cities and don't really see them that much. I pay very close attention to them. And it was in the summer of 2008. It had been quite dry, but towards the end of the summer, all of a sudden, the leaves on the trees wilted. It was the most astonishing thing I had ever seen. They simply just went limp everywhere. And I found it very frightening. So I started trying to understand what was happening to them. And my first thought was that it was drought. And from there, I thought it was an extended drought from climate change. So I started to learn everything I could about climate change. And really, for about a year, I was pretty convinced that that was the reason that the trees were dying, and other symptoms started showing up quite quickly, that they were in decline. And the first reactions I got from most people that I wrote to, I started writing a lot of different government agencies and newspaper editors and scientists, and the first reaction I got was, oh, don't be ridiculous. The trees are fine. Maybe your trees in your yard have a problem, but everywhere else they're okay. Since then, there have been some very large studies done by much more credentialed professionals than me that have shown that, in fact, all over the world, the trees are dying. But what happened was in the summer of 2009, as I was watching very carefully to see what was happening, I realized that plants and trees that exhibit ozone symptoms of damage, which are very classic, they've been known for years, and there's all kinds of resources that people can go to see what ozone damage leaves look like. But what I saw was that plants and trees that were being watered had the exact same degree of damage on their leaves as trees that were going out in forests. So the idea that it's drought simply doesn't fit the evidence. You'll find lots of people that will ignore that evidence, but it really doesn't fit the evidence. Even aquatic plants like lotus and water lilies that are in water all of the time have the same kind of damage to their leaves. So it's not that I don't think that drought is a problem or climate change, as I definitely do, but I don't think climate change is happening fast enough to explain the really rapid die-off that's going on with trees that it's quite visible and well-documented around the world at this point.
Right. This isn't just happening in your neck of the woods or mine. I mean, I looked at that documentary. They had quick snapshots of a whole dead forest in Spain, and we had news reports of Bangladesh and Africa, dying trees. It's pretty scary.
It is. It's happening. You can look. Actually, if you just Google dying trees and then put in any place, put in India or Japan or Hawaii or Mexico, you will get all kinds of, I mean, just endless news articles about people being concerned about trees dying off. But the thing is that they almost always will blame some local influence. In other words, this tree is like the California live oaks are dying from a fungus, and the pine trees are dying from a bark beetle, and the hemlocks are dying from the woolly adelgid, and it will go on and on and on. Fungus, bugs, disease, drought. But the thing is that all of these, what they call biotic factors, drought would be an abiotic factor, but the others that are living things, diseases, you know, bacteria and so forth, those are the biotic factors. They have always existed, and they've existed in harmony with trees. They have a job. Their job is that when the tree's dying, they move in and they break that tree down and return the nutrients that are locked up in that tree to the soil, and it's part of the whole ecological cycle. So to me, I'm not a scientist, so I can just say that logically it seems a little too of a convenient coincidence that suddenly all over the world, all the fungus and the disease and the bacteria and the insects are going crazy and killing trees off. There's an underlying reason, which in that ABC documentary you mentioned, finally one of the scientists, Craig Allen, mentioned something I've been saying for several years. It's like the trees have AIDS. In other words, their immune system is compromised. When somebody dies of AIDS, people don't say, oh, they died of pneumonia. That's not what killed them. The pneumonia might have been the last straw, but the problem is that they can't fight off the things that they would normally have immunity to. So it's really AIDS that killed somebody who has that horrible affliction. And our trees have AIDS. They can't fight off the insects and the disease that they used to be able to have defenses against. And the reason is because they're compromised because of ozone, which is something that has been known for over 100 years, that ozone's even worse for trees than it is for people. It's bad for people, but it's worse for plants.
Well, what is ozone?
Ozone is a very simple concept, and it's at the same time very confusing and complicated, which is one of the reasons that most people don't know anything about it. Ozone is not a pollutant that can be regulated by itself because it doesn't get directly emitted from anything. It gets created by precursors, which are mostly reactive nitrogen that comes from burning fuel, coal and oil and gasoline and ethanol. A lot of it's coming from the huge amount of over-fertilization that's being done for industrial agriculture. So that works its way into the air, into the soil, into the rain, and it reacts in the presence of sunlight with volatile organic compounds, some of which are also released from burning fuel, and some of them are naturally occurring and actually come from trees. So you get this sort of mix, this sort of cocktail of the reactive nitrogen and the volatile organic compounds and the sunlight. And these some very complicated chemical reactions happen in the atmosphere, none of which anyone can see. But it's still going on just the same as oxygen and CO2 are out there. You can't see it, but it's there and it's happening. And that is what creates ozone. So that's how Ronald Reagan got away with saying trees create pollution, because it does require the volatile organic compounds. But if there wasn't the reactive nitrogen from industrial processes, the volatile organic compounds would never turn into ozone in the first place. It's a very highly reactive gas, and anything that it comes into contact with, whether it's your lungs or the leaves of trees or even monuments, you know, granite gets eaten away by it. Or there were reports in the 50s when they had very high peaks in Los Angeles that women would literally have their nylon stockings melt on their legs. That was from ozone.
So you brought up a really important point. There's no factory churning out ozone that we could just shut down their smokestacks. This is a complicated chemical process that, as you say, it requires the precursors, and we talked about nitrogen. And you talk about the nitrogen cascade. What is that, and why does that matter?
Well, that's another thing. It's actually been called the worst environmental disaster you've never heard of. It's inextricably linked to ozone because it ends up being ozone a lot of the time, but for some reason in science, things tend to get compartmentalized and treated as specialties separately, which is too bad because it means that we're missing the big picture. The nitrogen cascade is being used in that sense as like a waterfall, but as one thing will occur and then that will then trigger chain reactions, each one of which is magnified from the one before. So if you put, as we are doing constantly, reactive nitrogen into the environment, it moves through various stages, and each one is impacted and even further impacts on the next sort of stage. So it gets into the water, it gets into the air, it gets into the soil, and it's, as I said before, it's coming from multiple sources. And it's a very big problem. It's also called an intractable problem. And the scientists mean by that is that there's no simple way to stop it because it's intrinsic to our modern lifestyle in the developed world. We use it and we produce it in enormous amounts. And the only way to really address it is to cut back on the kind of profligate use we have of energy and the industrial agricultural processes that we're sort of addicted to at this point.
And we even grow some crops that create nitrogen, like soy, I guess, would be one, and other nitrogen fixers. I always thought that was a good thing, but apparently that's just adding to this overcapacity of nitrogen.
Well, yeah, what's adding to it mostly, though, is the chemical fertilizers, which is what created the Green Revolution, which was what has led to this huge exponential growth in human population. There's so much food, and unfortunately, it can't last. The Earth Policy Institute came out with a release yesterday that's really frightening about the Mideast and how much grain they import, which is increasing every year. Their population's increasing every year, and their own production is plummeting. Because when you have that industrial monoculture that we're using to grow huge amounts of food, you deplete the quality of the soil, and you just basically burn everything out with all those nitrogen fertilizers, and it's simply not sustainable. So it's a gigantic problem.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Gail Sawacki, and we're talking about trees dying around the world and much more. And, you know, Gail, people like to hear about themselves first, so before we get to the big impact on plants, what are the human health effects of this low-lying ozone?
Yeah, as opposed to the stratospheric ozone, which we should make that clear, they're not the same thing at all. The stratospheric ozone hole that we heard about is far, far above at the top levels of our atmosphere, and it's good, and it's natural. It was there before people were here, but the low level that is the issue that comes from burning fuel and the other processes of industrialized civilization, that's very unhealthy. It's kind of like driving cars. People seem to be willing to accept a certain amount of sort of collateral damage. We want to drive our cars, so we know that there's a certain number of car accidents, and we just hope that it doesn't happen to us or somebody we love. And the same thing's been true so far with tropospheric ozone. It's very well known that it causes lung cancer, emphysema, asthma, allergies, heart disease, and it's been linked to other problems of developed nations like diabetes and autism. So it's almost like we sort of turn a blind eye and don't want to acknowledge that we're creating these. They're all epidemics. All the things I mentioned are epidemics, and we're creating them ourselves. But it's a trade-off so far that we've been willing to make, and it just remains to be seen how soon it will be before people are unwilling to accept that. Personally, my daughter got cancer, so my sense of how close that comes to home has been very much heightened since that occurred, especially because she lived a very, very healthy lifestyle, very active physically. We live out in a very rural area, and that's one of the things that people don't know about ozone. There's a woman painting a picture down the road from where I live one day, and she was painting a landscape, and I stopped and I was talking to her, and I asked her about what she thought about the trees. And interestingly, she was painting them with a lot more leaves than they actually had. There were all these sort of bare branches sticking out. She didn't put that in her painting. So I started talking to her about it, and I mentioned something about the pollution, and she looked up at this beautiful blue sky, and she said, "Well, there's no pollution here." And I said, "Well, yes, there is. We just can't see it. But it's there, and it's a big problem. It's what they call in the Environmental Protection Agency, they refer to it as the policy relevant background level, PRB. It's the constant level because they've reduced the high peaks that we used to hear about so much, especially in cities. But what's happened is that as the precursors increase, especially with the revolution and growth at development in Asia, that means that all over the world, even in very, very rural places where you wouldn't think there would be a problem, that background level is going up and up and up. So that if you're only measuring the peaks, you might say, oh, we've really improved air pollution. But if you're looking at the persistent background level, it is going up and up and up everywhere.
It can spread that far because, I mean, could ozone – there are places that aren't even near big cities. You've got forests dying in Africa where there isn't that much. Can it go that far?
Absolutely. If you think about it, just recently I saw a study. It's not related, but they just found a whole bunch of radioactive isotopes buried in the ice in Greenland that had come from our atomic testing in the Pacific and in the American West. And they were using them to date the levels of ice because they can trace it to different explosions of nuclear tests. But we really live in a closed system and things travel around. And there's, well, and we'll talk later, I guess, about this thing I wrote up about ozone, but there have been several major studies in the last 3 years that have tracked Asian pollution coming to the western U.S. So those areas where people like to say the bark beetle is attacking trees because it's warm in Colorado, that's dead central for where that ozone turns up that started out in China.
And when we look at trees and plants, I know you've written quite a bit about this, but I was surprised. I looked at pictures on your website at Wits End, and I thought, I know about plants, but then I realized, well, these patterns on the leaves that you're showing and this damage to the needles, I'm seeing it right around me in Vancouver, which is supposed to have nice, clean air. So tell us, what does it do to the trees and plants? What should we be looking for?
Well, there's two important things to keep in mind. First of all, there's no test for ozone because, as I said, it's very reactive. It breaks down and does bad things as soon as it's absorbed. So the way that researchers have determined where it is impacting vegetation is because it leaves damage behind on leaves. But a very important facet of this to understand is that generally, before you see the damage on the leaves, there's already damage inside that you don't see, especially in the roots. So trees that have been exposed to ozone tend to have their root systems shrivel up. And that's why you see them falling over in the wind when they didn't used to fall over in the wind, and the branches didn't used to break as much as they do. And they're doing that because there's internal damage. So that's just the sheer number of trees that you can see falling down now is indicative of some kind of issue going on internally. And as far as the visual impacts that you can see, there's two things to look for, and your audience might want to just go outside at some point and look for this, especially it's early in the spring in the northern hemisphere, but as the summer goes on, it will become much more obvious. So you've got leaf issues, and first thing that you would see is what they call stippling. It looks kind of like little speckles, and then you can have bronzing where the color gets more intense. And then that goes into chlorosis, which means the problem is that the leaves aren't photosynthesizing and producing chlorophyll. This whole process gets disrupted by the ozone when it enters the stomates. So the leaves start to look yellow. And then they've got necrosis, that's a great word, which means they actually look dead. I mean, they'll just turn brown or black and fall off. And one thing you can see that's very typical is that the older leaves that are lower on a plant, or like the inner leaves of like an evergreen, like hollies or boxwood or any kind of pine tree, those older needles or leaves inside that have had more seasons of exposure, they look worse than the newer growth. And a lot of times they'll just fall off. So you get these kind of like hollow shells of perennial evergreens, and they call it a tufted look on pine trees when they've got like new needles at the end of the branch, like a tuft, but the older needles have fallen off. So those are all things that you can find on trees. You can find them on plants that are flowering, ornamental plants that people put in their pots that they water. Even tropical things like, well, I don't know, marigolds or nasturtiums or morning glories. They're not, you know, this idea that the temperature's changed and that's why they're having problems. Those things are meant to grow in tropical areas. So if somebody in New England or Vancouver is growing an ornamental flower like that for the summer and those leaves have that damage, it's not the temperature. It's the ozone that they're absorbing. And another thing is as you get to the fall, after the end of the summer, a very typical problem is what they call premature senescence, and that means that the leaves fall off earlier than they should. And they also don't show their fall color. They don't get those in New England, and I think it's true in actually a number of places around the world, that in the fall the leaves turn these brilliant, gorgeous, bright colors. And that's been, well, there's been scientific measurements done over the past few years that's documented that that color is disappearing.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking with Gail Sawaki from New Jersey about the impacts of common air pollution. And you also, in an email, wrote to me, look, we should be talking about the impacts on food crops. Everybody's worried about the food crisis. Let's look at what ozone is doing to our agriculture.
That's a really large area of research. And it's important because it just begs the question. They've documented so many times using controlled fumigation in chambers that ozone damages agricultural annual crops. All of them, really. I mean, some of them are more tolerant than others, but they're all susceptible to damage. So whether it's soybeans or corn or wheat or rice or any of the other less important crops like spinach or parsley or whatever, all of them can be damaged by ozone. And, of course, those are all annual crops, so it's worse for trees because trees get cumulative damage, you know, season after season after season. But the annual crops are a big issue. And the USDA, for instance, and many universities have been researching for a long time trying to develop genetically tolerant strains of crops, which to me is just ironic because even if they could do that, which they have not actually been able to do, but even if they could, that's not going to do anything for the wild vegetation. We can't genetically engineer all the florists in the world to be more tolerant to ozone. So it's really sort of a desperate measure, I think, on their part to think that we can somehow engineer our way out of this problem.
Right. The Australian TV documentary showed somebody giving shots of nutrients to trees to build them back up after the damage they'd suffered. But we're not going to go around to all the forests of the world giving trees shots. But when we're talking about crops, you also talk about the lack of quality of protein and minerals as the plants are having to fight to get the nutrients they need. They're not able to because of this ozone pollution. Can you talk to us about that?
Well, simply, they have to allocate resources to repair the damage that's done from the ozone, which is one reason, or maybe the reason, that the roots shrink. but it also impacts the production of the nuts and seeds and the other grains that we want from them for crops. It reduces the amount, and this has all been documented, very well documented by agricultural study teams. So the actual volume gets reduced, and the quality, the nutritive quality gets reduced. So that's a problem not just for people that are eating these crops, but for animals that we give them this for feed, you know, for cows and pigs and chickens. So they're eating maybe the same volume of food, but they're not getting the same amount of protein and vitamins. And of course, this is true too for wild animals, that when they're out there foraging for what they call it, when it's in the wild, they call it, at least in this country, they call it mast. And it's all the cumulative, you know, the acorns and the other nuts and the berries and whatnot that wild animals eat. They have a problem because their food is no longer as nutritious as it should be. So it really goes across the board, this issue. And another thing to keep in mind is that one thing that plants do when they are, especially trees, when they're in decline, it's kind of poetic what they do, is they almost deliberately, I guess they don't think, but they're programmed to, as a survival, to pass their genes on, they're disposed to allocate more resources to reproduction. So when they sense that they're going to die in a season or two or three, because they don't die right away, they have a lot of stored energy. They're made to be that way, like a camel. But they allocate extra energy into nut and fruit production. So the last few years, you'll see pine trees that are absolutely so covered with pine cones, you can't even see the tree. And same thing with some fruit trees, apple trees, that they're just, they have so many apples, their branches are breaking. It's like a deliberate attempt they make. Of course, it doesn't last. It only works for a season or two, and then they're finished. But they do make that attempt. It's quite remarkable.
You know, I've seen this myself. I used to be a plant columnist, believe it or not, way back in my journalism days. And I noticed during the cooler winters we had in the late 70s that some of the trees that were challenged would produce many, many more seeds than we'd ever seen before. And so it is something they do. If they feel like they're going to go, they say, well, I better reproduce as much as I can before I do. So it's kind of sad. You know, when I was doing research for this, for our talk, I came across a really interesting paper in the journal Nature. It was published back in 2003 by Wendy Loya and others, and it said that tropospheric ozone has increased 35% over the last century. And they were looking at, okay, if there's more ozone, we're also going to have more carbon dioxide in the planet as we keep adding more by burning fossil fuels. So plants will do better with more carbon dioxide. How does that relate to the ozone? And they concluded, and I quote, "Our results suggested that in a world with elevated atmospheric carbon dioxide concentrations, global scale reductions in plant productivity due to elevated ozone levels will also lower soil carbon formation rates significantly." So what they were looking at is, okay, they might do better because they've got more carbon dioxide, but because of this elevated ozone, they're going to suffer.
Radio EcoShock.
If you've just tuned in, our guest is Gail Zawacki, speaking out on the pollution that is killing trees, shrubs, and crops, despite all the government backpatting on how supposedly our air is cleaner. Radio EcoShock will be right back with more from Gail on her adventures in the Occupy movement. Then we'll talk to one of the most cited scientists studying the impacts of the changed atmosphere on forests and crops, Lisa Ainsworth from the Department of Plant Biology at the University of Illinois. Will our carbon dioxide exhaust help the plants? Stay tuned.
Teeming green. Green brain, you're facing lobotomy. Climate Control Center for the World. Ancient cord of coexistence hacked by parasitic greenhead scam.